This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
This hour is brought to you by the law offices of Jeffrey M. Leving.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score. Reasonable, level-headed, informed sports talk for your workday. Dan Bernstein.
Tom Gold Coast, you're on The Score. Hi, Tom.
For me, after game two, I was almost at peace with what was inevitable. I thought the difference was almost night and day between what the Sox were versus the Astros. After game two, I was like, we're going to lose. I wanted to lose badly just to show Jerry Reinsdorf, hey, this is how far we have to go from a division contender to a World Series contender.
That's what last year was supposed to be, though. We lived this already.
Yes.
This year, they said World Series standard this year. Everything you're saying, I totally get, but that was how we left a year ago.
Leila Rahimi.
You have to get more out of your starting pitching in order to even have any of this go. With that team in particular, and the way the Sox have always been as an organization, that's where it starts. Lynn, Giolito, Cease, and Rodon combined for only 12 and a third innings and a 10.22 ERA. That is not going to get any job done.
Frank in Oak Park.
Picking up on sort of that general thing from the first call, there's a lot of negative talk about the lack of catch.
Hey, Frank, we're going to have you call back. We're having some phone issues. Either that or you paid a visit to Munchkin Land.
I've got a perfect puzzle for you.
I've been breathing helium all morning, and I have a question for you regarding the tight ends.
That was Frank, but that was not really right. Frank. We have all been thrown off in the most pleasant way
this
possible.
This is Frank. Someone's squeezing my sack right now, but it doesn't mean I don't have a question.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show.
If you are wise, you'll listen to me.
Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That sometimes in radio, weird things happen, and you just roll with them.
We were talking about this call today, just before the show started, because it was still something that sat with us, Mike Rankin. I'm glad you put it in the open. Is Frank Park, A, officially famous, and B, to the point where if we hear his voice in any other way, we're like, whoa, stop this show right now. Something has gotten terribly wrong.
This can't be right. Our entire worldview is thrown off.
How long did we talk about that call today before the show started? 5 minutes?
Easily.
Maybe 7 or 8?
Yes. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is Thursday of Bears-Packers Week 1 in 2021. Looking forward to this first matchup, and it's a nice noon game on a Sunday. It feels good. It feels better than, like, waiting with dread for an entire evening and have it be a night game and you just know horrible things are going to happen. I don't know. I don't have the same sense of dread when it's a noon game, and I can't quite explain why. Gary Ellerson, the former Packer and co-host of the Wendy's Big Show on 1250, The Fan of Milwaukee, is going to join us at 9:40. 10 o'clock, Jay Zawoski. What does he do now? He's a managing editor of podcasts and multimedia at WBBM. He's also a
Transponster.
Yeah, he's also a Blackhawks expert and the host of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. He'll check in with that Hawks disaster and just sort of give us a scene setter. Let us know what we need to know about this part of the Hawks season at 10 o'clock. We'll hear from the quarterbacks who are going to be on the field at Soldier Field at 10:20. Midday Midway at 10:40. I've got a great story. I can't believe. All I can say is it happened again. Anthony Heron.
That is my shirt.
Oh, it is.
Oops, I did it again.
Yep, oops, it happened again.
Britney's free, fam. Got to celebrate.
Is she official yet? Does the conservatorship's been dissolved?
Knowing how slowly the state of California court system moves, probably not, but she's on her way.
Is she allowed to get married to this guy?
I don't know. She should be.
I don't know how that works. Anthony Heron will talk Bears and Packers and NFL at 11. We'll have some surprises along the way as well. And near the end of the show, talk about another game that we watched last night, a very exciting one. In fact, 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR The Score. You want to send an email, feel free. That goes to Bernstein Rahimi at 670thescore.com. You go there to listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. Your texting is found in the infamous text zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein Rahimi. She's at Layla Rahimi. I'm at Dan underscore Bernstein. Make sure you download the Odyssey app, and then you can stream the score on your mobile devices. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. And as always, there is Twitch. Hello. Twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. And you tune in there, and you can see us. You can see her Britney Spears t-shirt. You can see my free Blackhawks Stadium Series sweatshirt.
I can't believe they gave you that. It's a really nice hoodie.
It is. There's a stain in here I can't get out, though. But I wore it to my son's semifinal game on Tuesday, so now I have to wear it to the finals tonight.
Did you wash it?
No. It's a hoodie. They're like self-washing.
Oh, dear.
If you hang them up long enough, they're, you know.
What is this stain?
Well, I don't know. There's that. And I tried to get it out, and it doesn't come out.
Dawn.
It's like gravy or something.
Got it. Gravy.
I don't know what it is.
That's a good inner peace question. If you are likely to get a stain on your shirt, what's the stain going to be? You can make your jokes to yourself. Me, it would be mustard. If there's mustard free floating in the air, kind of like coronavirus, I will absorb it. It will replicate and
jeans,
end up in a stain on my shirt.
My jeans would be mustard. My shirt would be something that I would have to like chalk to get out, like my infamous escargot story.
What? This is the most Dan Bernstein line ever. Infamous escargot story.
No, I told you that. We went to Paris as a family, and Beth's like, "Get yourself some new shirts. We're going to Paris for God's sake. Get yourself some things."
So props to Beth.
So I got a couple nice shirts. And all it says, "A very, very first night," and it's my favorite restaurant in the world, Allard in Paris, I'm like my absolute happiest place ever, and we order the greatest escargot you've ever had in your life, where the snails like sit in a tank and they eat basil.
What?
Yeah.
This is bougie as hell.
It's the best. But it's not. The restaurant isn't. It's really sort of, it's not a fancy restaurant.
The snails eat basil.
It's cheap, but it's not fancy. They're not there. So they bring out the escargot, and they have the escargot holder.
Yeah.
It's like a little clamp.
From the Blues Brothers?
Kind of, yeah. How much for the women? So I very first bite, and I'm all excited, and I click the snail into the little holder thing, and I'm bringing it up to take my fork to it, and boom! The snail shoots up in the air, an entire absolute gush of garlic butter all over my new shirt.
Slippery.
It just like immediately, very, very single first bite, first dinner there. Shirt. And then I learned the chalk trick.
What's that?
Take actual like chalkboard chalk.
Yes.
And just on all the grease stain, just cover it with chalk, wash it regular, comes out immediately. It eats grease. It's a most incredible hack ever. Anyway, where was I? Connor
Club soda for red wine, right?
There's also wine away. There's an enzyme that eats red wine. Trust me, I know that too. Connor O'Donnell, Brian Gertsch, and Evan Thomas.
God bless them.
Direct the video feed on Twitch. Hi, you can see my sweatshirt with the stains.
They put a lot of people in timeout on Monday.
Who did? What do you mean they put people in timeout?
Connor and Evan.
Oh, in the chat?
Yes.
What, do they mute people?
Line was weird on Monday. There was a collective energy. The Twitch line was weird. Everybody got put in timeout. Wasn't it real angsty, Mike Rankin?
It was your first Bears Monday, Layla. So it's typically, you know, you learn things on the fly here at the Score, right? It happens.
No, there is. I can say this now, at least amongst our listeners, there's some collective angst that happens
every
now and then. We're like, we don't understand why the text line is being insane, and we don't understand why everybody's being put into Twitch timeout.
For whatever reason.
And that was one of the days.
Right, like it all just happened at once.
Do you think it's like lunar cycles, or it has to be like something about the tides or the position of the earth that makes Chicago sports fans weird?
A full moon. I mean, sports results probably affect a sports station. I'm going to go with that too, especially when you think about the White Sox game being what rained out and then moved. And
yeah, that's pretty reasonable. Things just kind of went pear-shaped on us all of a sudden.
Yeah, there was a lot happening on Monday. The Sox had won that horribly long game, and then the Bears had the win against the Raiders. Like, you'd think that those two things would combine for happiness, but instead it combined for, like, sports angsty. And everybody got put in timeout. Evan just messaged me on Twitch and said it happens.
And yeah, to the Twitcher who just said, "I was today old when I learned the life hack to get grease off my shirts." Thank you, Dan Burt. Yes. And even if it's an old stain, if it's an old grease stain.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Old, really?
Yeah. You can use just regular white chalkboard chalk and just fill it in and just do that to all your shirts and all the grease stains and wash it. Normally they'll be gone. I kid you not.
Well, guess this extra time in this segment was worth it after all.
Yes, I'm saving you money. You don't have to go buy new shirts. So, or you wait till somebody gives you free shirts and then you just wear those. That's the other life hack. Is you just also, go through life sort of accruing shirts. I want to mention Mike Rankin and Ray Diaz, by the way, before I forget. Hello. Hi, guys. Thank
you. Hi. Thank you for your help.
Thank you, Ray.
Patience. Dealing with the text line and our group text as well. That said, I did also tell you, I was like, wow, that looks like a shirt you actually paid for.
You did say that. I'm like,
and
nope.
You're like, nope.
Of course not. No, not true.
I don't want to start with hockey.
Fine. When do we...
I don't want to start with the Sky Loss.
You don't have to. I want to start with this. Are we going to get the White Sox answers we crave? Do we have a timeline?
Will he make any adjustments?
Seriously. Who's supposed to talk and when? There hasn't been a
I don't know.
No release has been sent out.
All of that is a very fair question because Rick Hahn usually does a end of season moratorium.
Correct.
You're looking for a specific quote. You're looking for the offense is broken quote. You're not going to get it.
I'm looking for who's talking when about what. Well, Paul Sullivan wrote it today about if Tony La Russa says if the players want him back, he'll come back. Are they going to go take a straw poll of the players? Will they do anything? You know, seriously, if he said that, is that just a comment that he said that has no meaning? Or are they actually going to call people in? They have exit meetings to end the year? We don't know. This is all a complete mystery because of lack of availability. I would love to know when we get answers to these questions now after they lick their wounds of this painful ouster.
You know who I want running the exit interviews if there is a White Sox to run them? Also, can I get a ruling on White Sox versus White Sox for a singular player?
White Sox.
No, really?
Yeah, because it's X.
Ugh. Okay, so for a White Sox, I would say that all exit interviews should run through Eloy Jimenez.
He conducts them?
Yes.
Sitting there with his shirt open?
No, he wouldn't put his shirt open. This is not an important game.
It'd be like the Rick Camp job interview. He'd just be waiting there and just like waiting as the moment it's over, he runs out and unbuttons his shirt.
I thought he only did that for major games. Normally, he keeps his shirts pretty reasonable.
I just want to hit a damn cutoff, man.
No, let's throw everybody out at home in a dramatic manner.
I wondered this at the beginning of the season. Do you think there was a disconnect between the way Rick Hahn constructed the 40-man plus roster and the way Tony La Russa managed it? Do you think that was prevalent at all?
If you have to manage or proof your roster, then you're not going to win as many games as you want.
I think it's impossible to judge because of the injuries. I think this year was such an outlier when it came to injuries that however they got to this point, they were on like their 14th outfield, Nick Williams and Brian Goodwin.
Jay Clam.
And eventually finding, you know, sort of lucking your way into Sheets, which is always great if that happens for you. But that to have that chance was it's hard to tell who was what and who accomplished what because so much of it was out of necessity.
Okay, so since we have the extra gift of time here, I want to throw this out to you two. I was trying to find the article from Fangraphs when Jason Hayward was signed to the Cubs because, roll with me on this, people, there was a combination of position player war between three significant positions that was mirrored in that signing. That was also the same formula that Theo Epstein had in Boston the last time he won the World Series with that team. And that position player war combination totaled over 5. And it supports my thesis and idea that the best of the White Sox right now is still not the best of Major League Baseball to get from good to truly World Series great.
Well, part of that is a full season out of Luis Robert.
Correct.
Because he himself should be a minimum 5 war player.
And it's 3 players that can get you to that position player war combination over 5. I don't even know if that is operable, like operative
anymore.
Are you
sure it was 5?
Because, yes.
Are you sure it's not 15?
No, it's 5 each. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right, it's like total of 15.
Yeah,
right.
So like 5 each out of 3 position players. And then that was like the magic combination. Now that was 2016. And the last time he won with the Red Sox, which was 13. I can't think of it off the top of my head. So... No, not 13. It was earlier than that because it was he left in 11. So anyway, that combination of Theo's last World Series with the Sox and also Theo's World Series in 2016 after citing Hayward both proved to be correct. And I'm trying to find the article, and it's driving me insane because I need to use that formula to measure the Sox war. And since we had extra time in this beginning segment, I figured
I'd throw that out there. Yeah, 2007, Layla, was the Epstein last World Series with the Red Sox. But you're thinking, like, who would you... Would it be Luis Robert among the top three White Sox?
Oh, my God,
has
yes.
To be.
Right? And then
the guy had 3.2 F4 in 68 games.
Absolutely.
So it's got to be three position players that combine. They've got to have five each. And that combination is 15. But the combined three position players having the five war.
And do the White
Moncada's
Sox have
done
that?
It. Yeah, Moncada's been a five war player before.
Correct. But when was that? Was that 19?
Yoan Moncada was a 5.6 war player in 2019.
Yeah, because you knew it wasn't last year.
4.5 this year.
That's it. So I think like that was the article I wanted to reread because I read it randomly in 2016, and I wanted to come back to that now, given the White Sox metrics. I don't even know if it still works anymore.
That's interesting. Sorry, Layla. What
no,
you just
go
said
ahead.
About Yoan Moncada, 4.5 war. What was the narrative surrounding Yoan Moncada this year? He underperformed, at least according to some.
According to what you saw out of him out of 2019. So this is something I've been cooking, but not very long. Like it hit me last night while I was trying to avoid watching the Blackhawks fail.
How many five-win players do you think the Dodgers had this year?
I bet it's more than three.
None.
No? Okay, so see, it might not work.
This
then.
Is fascinating. Max Muncy, 4.9.
Not Mookie?
Will Smith, 4.6. No, Mookie Betts only played 122 games, and he was a 3.9 win player.
Dang, I would have at least thought he was four.
That shocked me, because I clicked on it just to say, well, let's see here how many five. Oh, okay. That's really interesting. And then you think about overachievers. You think about maybe finding some unexpected value. Let's examine the Giants. In that same regard, Brandon Crawford, 5.5, Buster Posey, 4.9.
See, so that means that doesn't hold anymore. But
maybe.
At the time...
Or maybe it's an outlier year.
But at the time, that was considered a formula that was a Theo Epstein hallmark, was the idea of now that you have Hayward, you had three position players who had five war each. And that combination is what got you... His last World Series.
Boston Red Sox, Xander Bogaerts, 5.2, Rafael Devers, 4.7, Kike Hernandez, 4.
What about Houston?
I'll check them right now as we speak, because I think that's a completely fair question to ask about the Astros. And they were led by Carlos Correa at 5.8.
5.8, dude.
Jose Altuve.
He's second, right, to Otani in overall war in Major League Baseball.
I think Juan Soto is...
No, Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler at 7.8.
Well, if we just do position players, we've got Carlos Correa at 5.8, Jose Altuve 5.2, and Kyle Tucker at 4.8.
See? Okay, so once again, you do not have three players with five.
Yep. I'm gonna keep checking teams here to see if
it's
somebody...
It's a weird random metric that I happened to stumble across when I was doing Hayward research when he was signed.
Next up, Gary Ellerson will take us behind the scenes of the Bears' upcoming opponent, his former team, the Packers, next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The thing I find cool about the rivalry, obviously, you got two iconic stadiums in Lambeau and Soldier Field, great venues to play. We've had some phenomenal games over the years, but... You know, when especially Chicago, they've had a few more coaching changes than we have over the last 17 years or so. But most of the coaches that come in, they always say, one of the main goals is to beat Green Bay. And that's how special the rivalry is, because people know for the last, 14, it's going to be how you play against Green Bay is going to determine what happens in the North.
I think you know that voice. Is the thorn in the Bears' side, their nemesis for forever, as long as we can remember. Aaron Rodgers will be on that field once again, going up against a formidable Bears defense, and the wild card being a young Bears quarterback who hasn't had this experience before. Here's a guy who's had plenty of football experience, and radio experience for that matter. He's our buddy Gary Ellerson, the former Green Bay Packer, co-host of Wendy's Big Show 10 to 2. On 1250 AM, The Fan in Milwaukee. He joins us on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Gary, how you been?
Pretty good, buddy. How you guys doing?
We're good, Gary. Thanks for joining us. And I need to confess to you, I was pretty happy with the result that I saw out of the Saints and Packers game to start the season. But the way they've responded, being able to rattle off the wins that they have, to do that after the first week of the season, they look like a completely different team. Even after that crazy win last week, how have you assessed them since then and just being able to see what you've seen over five?
I think the NFL as a whole, I think you'll see that. Preseason is not what it used to be. Guys are not practicing as much as they used to. And, you know, Rodgers was out this year, wasn't around. They didn't get much with their timing down with their receivers. So I think you'll see a lot of teams that will start slow and come on fast, maybe at mid-season here. And I think that's really what happened with the Green Bay Packers. They just didn't have any continuity. They had a lot going on during the offseason. I think they just kind of weren't ready for that game against the Saints. And the Saints came out ready, and so you got to give them credit.
Well, it also fit the idea that maybe everything that happened in the offseason from people who weren't in Wisconsin and people who were observing from the outside said, okay, this dissension is real. Like, there's something here regarding Aaron Rodgers' beautiful mystery tour, whatever you want to call it. But that hasn't been the case in the last four games. What did you make of it when it was going on?
Well, I didn't like it. I'm old school, and I wish they could just keep that stuff at bay, but they just couldn't keep it in-house. And you know, Rodgers then came in and talked a little bit about it during the press conference and basically called, you know, the front office on carpet. And I think you had a little dissension there with Rodgers and with probably some guys inside that locker room. And most certainly, I think there are some guys on the coaching staff didn't like what were being said, and most certainly there were some players. And I think they just had to work through all of that. And I think at the end of the day, maybe they have gotten themselves together and righted the ship a little bit and trying to play as a team. And I think you're seeing that now, that some of the guys are leaving that off-the-field stuff now inside, you know, inside the locker room or really between themselves.
Another ongoing storyline for the Packers has been the way the offense can marry what Matt LaFleur has wanted to do with the autonomy that Aaron Rodgers has to look it all over and kind of run what he wants and make the changes he wants. How has the offense evolved, and how have these two men come to learn each other a little bit in a way that's helping them operate comfortably?
Everything with Aaron Rodgers, I think, is a work in progress. I think when you see one game, it may not be like the next game. And that, the offense, to me, is a little unpredictable because of that situation. And I think you saw it against Cincinnati, you know, red zone. I mean, was horrible. I mean, you can tell that there are two different game plans within one game plan. Like, you know, there were some things that what Matt LaFleur wants to do, and there are some things that what Aaron Rodgers wants to do. And that's really no different than what we saw under Mike McCarthy. I mean, there was two game plans with Mike McCarthy. There was a game plan where Mike McCarthy wanted to do some things. There was a game plan that Aaron Rodgers wanted to do. And I guess you just have to, you know, get down with that, knowing that that's what's going on. Now, you saw last year that Tampa game at the end when, you know, Matt LaFleur decided, you know, we're going to kick the field goal. I don't care what Rodgers wants to do. We're kicking the field goal this time. And so you have some of those things that will arise where they will butt heads. Well, Rodgers wants to do something and Matt LaFleur wants to do another thing.
That is, to me, the lasting image I have, and really the place where everything in the offseason started for Green Bay is the look on Rodgers' face after that third and goal and the decision that was made and everything that happened afterward. And it's interesting you bring up the idea of the two game plans. Is there an example you can give us where you've seen plays maybe, or a specific quarter or a game where you're saying that is definitely more LaFleur and this one was definitely more Rodgers?
Well, not necessarily. I think you just got to look at, there's a lot of RPOs in there, right? And I think there's some run plays where you see it's most definitely a run play, but I'm going to throw it out here to Devontae and see if he can get me 5 or 6 yards. I mean, so those things are happening. So specifically, I just really can't put my finger on it, but you do see where there are designed run plays. You can see the running back just standing there like, oh, what's going on? I thought I was supposed to get the ball here. But no, we're throwing it out here instead. So you can tell when those types of things are happening within this offense.
The mind meld that Rodgers seems to have with Devontae Adams now is really remarkable. And it's sometimes that these things are hard to quantify. How much of what they are doing is planned stuff? How much is just connection and recognition and doing things just going off the cuff?
Well, I think, you know, there's a method to their madness, so to speak, because they know each other so well. But I think it's a lot like, you know, that offense that they had in Atlanta with Julio Jones, with Shanahan and Matt Ryan in there when they fed him the ball a lot. Listen, they move Devontae around a lot, and they do that to get the mismatches that they want with particular defense. I mean, sometimes he's in slot, he's in motion, he's on the outside, he's in the backfield. It's almost like, where's Waldo? And they get the defensive matchups that they want, and they try to exploit that, and then you know they're going to go to Devontae. So they're trying to get him on the weakest DB that they can. Even if you double him, he still seems to get open with the way Matt LaFleur is trying to disguise and using him.
Oh, it's interesting you bring that up, too, because his numbers varied big time in the last 2 weeks. You know, 200 yards receiving, 200 yards receiving last week, and then, you know, in the 60s the week before. So what do you expect out of this Chicago team when they've had a cornerback shuffle and Jalen Johnson is calling for him?
Well, I just don't see anybody stopping Devontae yet. I mean, the Packers just go to him too much. And the way they disguise him and move him around, I still think he'll be able to get open. I don't think it's 200 again, but most certainly I think he's going to get at least, 17 targets for sure. And then everybody else will get the rest. And people forget, though, Aaron Jones has been very good again this year. A.J. Dillon, our young running back who they drafted a couple years ago very high, is playing really well. And then you sprinkle in Robert Tonyan. I mean, and, you know, everybody talk about Aaron Rodgers, the bear killer, but to me, I think you got to go back and look at the slot receiver that we just brought back. I think that's more maybe the bear killer than anybody else. Rodgers had to have back.
Well, we know that Chris Conte is still trying to find him somewhere. So as soon as he can identify him, we'll talk about him. But there is a famous NBA three-point specialist who may or may not now be a famous NBA coach who went through a shooting slump. And in an effort to unplug and reset his circuits in that shooting slump, he went out and did a bunch of tequila shots, and he told his teammates to drag him back to his hotel room when all was said and done, and he would see them the next morning. And that's what he did, and it worked. And if I'm Mason Crosby right now, I know you're in Wisconsin, but maybe you park yourself, you get yourself an Uber, you park yourself at the end of the bar at the supper club, and you have as many Wisconsin brandy old fashions or bourbon old fashions they'll bring you, because that dude looks like he needs a system reset.
Well, he does, and he's had this before. I think we were in Detroit 1 year where he missed like 4 or 5 field goals. And so this not out of the, you know, realm of expectation where he's been able to struggle like this and then gather himself back. So he's a pro. He's been around a long time. It was a great weather in Cincinnati, so there's really no reason why he was missing that. Now, Matt LaFleur said it was their fault, that they should have been, and he didn't call anybody on the carpet, but Rodgers said the laces should have been turned out and that he likes it this way and that way. So, you know, kickers can be very temperamental. They like to have things their way. You know, we just changed. We just got a new holder. So hopefully they can get that worked out. But it's not uncommon to see Mason Crosby struggle like this in a game.
Gary, thank you so much for taking time. I know right before your show, too. I know it's not easy. We appreciate it very much.
No, guys, I really appreciate it. What are you guys thinking? Bears winning or what do you got?
I'm not bullish on it. I would love to be, but...
I heard a stat that actually makes me more optimistic than I usually am. The reason for my optimism is that the Bears aren't blitzing this year. They have one of the lowest blitz rates in the NFL, and they've got a lot of sacks, and that's good. That means they can generate a pass rush, especially with David Bakhtiari out, with more people in coverage. I like the math. I like the geometry, and I like the math. So that they've got more of a shot than I would usually think.
Well, it's been proven. If you can rush four and get pressure and drop everyone else, that slows Rodgers down.
Yep.
That has been proven. He struggles with cover two. He just does. And because he wants to push everything down the field all the time, he gets greedy. He doesn't want to just take what you give him. So, and that's what Matt LaFleur, I think, has been working with him on, is just take what the defense gives you. But if you can rush four and drop everyone else, you've got a shot, because that'll frustrate him to no end.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Awesome stuff, Gary. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Gary.
That's Gary Ellerson. Next up, we'll find out the license plate was on the truck that hit the Blackhawks last night. And Jay Zawoski will also allow this to be our sort of here are your Blackhawks kind of segment. And even better, here is Jay Zawoski. So it's all going to be warm and fuzzy and fun next on The Score.